hello and welcome to Drive Through HR, the internet's number one HR talk show. And today we are talking with William Tincup, my fabulous co-host and founder of the show, and the folks from eHarmony, Dan Erickson and Steve Carter. Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hello, Crystal and William.
Hello, hello. So, I understand it's Dan's birthday. I think we should get all of the embarrassing birthday stuff out of the way first. Happy birthday to you.
Oh,
I won't say the whole thing, but happy birthday to you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. It's good to finally be a 21 and of legal drinking age.
Right on. Okay. No judgments, but I think that's probably not true. all right. So Dan, Steve, for everyone that's listening in and may not know you and your wonderfulness the way that I do, why don't you introduce yourself?
All right. I will go first. I will point out, too, that anyone who's looking at the website, that lovely picture of Dan and Steve, the woman next to me is not actually Steve. That she actually has a lot more hair than Steve, but I love that picture. That's me and my wife. So let's see, I'm Dan Erickson. I'm the general manager of Elevated Careers by eHarmony, which is the name of our product. And I have been, let's see, my background is I was in the job board industry for many years and had written up a business plan for a product, a matching product, much like the product that we're designing. And I gave it to the CEO of eHarmony about 8 years ago. And he said, I will pass this along to my people. And he passed it along to his people, and nothing ever came of it. And that was kind of it for the time being, because I had done a lot of research on the matching work that eHarmony does, and really felt that with the kind of culture and values matching and personality matching that I was looking to do was only really going to be able to done by someone with the kind of expertise that Steve and the people he works with could do. So that went away, and then 2.5 years ago, I got a call from eHarmony saying, hey, we want to create this, change this company from just an online dating company to a real kind of relationship company, and would you like to come out here to California and try to do this business? So here I am. I'm managing this product that we're building to match employees and or talent and employers through matching, obviously, on competency, skills and skill sets and experience, because that's important, and we want to do that as well, if not better, than everyone else. But really, the meat of the matching is matching core work values with company cultures, and then personality factors that influence work relationships. We think we can create a lot better matching, if not create the first real matching in the industry. So that's kind of my background. Steve, how about you?
I'm Steve Carter. I'm a psychologist. I've worked at eHarmony for the past 15 or so years. I started working with Dr. Warren and his associates back in 99 on the original compatibility concept. And then was involved in building out the original website and doing ongoing research and compatibility and product optimization and things like that. So when Dan's idea was brought up upon Neil's return as CEO, I was very interested in working on it. I thought it was a great concept to try to take the things we've learned about how to model compatibility and apply that to helping people find jobs. That would be they'd be most successful in, and helping companies find the talent that'd be most successful in the positions they're trying to fill, just kind of seemed like a no-brainer, which is perfect coming from Dan. So I have been working with Dan for the past 2 years, two and a half maybe, since we first started looking at what type of research we would need to do to validate the concepts and build the IP for the product, and then build an actual product. So it's been very exciting.
Well, so I guess we know what's been keeping you guys up at night, but this week we're going to talk about HR getting lucky. So I got to ask, I mean, I've got some ideas, but in your opinion, how does compatibility matching really help HR get lucky in terms of finding employee fit and reducing attrition, improving workplace culture? Like, where does it go? How does HR get lucky with this kind of stuff?
So I'll take that first from kind of an overall concept of the go ahead, Crystal. Were you saying something, Crystal? Are we still here?
You're fine. You're fine. She's trying to put her phone on mute. You're good though, brother.
All right. Sorry about that. So on, from an overall look at this product that we're creating, you know, I think the way along the vein of HR gets lucky, I think for too long, in my opinion, my humble opinion, HR is too often looked at by the CEOs and CFOs of the world as still a cost center when I really believe that it's important and that we can help companies understand that HR is really a profit center. And if they get the matching correct as far as if you get the hiring right and the company culture right and thus the engagement of your employees right, you know, there's studies that show that can provide increases to the bottom line of up to 35%. It can increase a stock price by anywhere up to 4.5%. And that's really important. It's really important for HR and recruiting to be looked at as another profit center and get the due they deserve. And I think that's to me is really the goal of this product.
So hold on, I'm gonna hop in real quick.
Sure.
By the way, I'm back. Yay. So you said it can swing business results, stock price, like 4.5%. That's huge. That's outside of HR. That's like a business C-level something that I think would stand up and take notice, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. And also to the client, if you get it wrong, it can provide the swing the other way. So that's why I think it's so important for HR and recruiting to get the help they need in really doing matching. I don't think anyone's ever really provided matching for recruiting. So, Steve, you want to talk a little bit about that?
Or at least they haven't done it at the top of funnel and made it broadly available. Yeah, I mean, I think what Dan is saying and when he brings up the high level, it's really about matching. That ties back to what you said. I mean, your question was how does HR get lucky? I think the whole point of this product is to take some of the luck out of it in the same way that the whole point with eHarmony was to take some of the luck out of getting into a relationship and more specifically take some of the bad luck out and make it much more likely that when you choose someone based on all the subjective and objective and reified and soft inputs that you make it based on that there's a higher probability that you are going to be correct because a lot of quantitative matching has gone on in the background before you started your own unique process, which is designed, you know, that background being designed to give you a much safer and a much more optimized view in which to be making your own decisions.
Very good. Let me ask, and this is William, let me ask a basic question back on compatibility. What do people get wrong or misunderstand about the concept of compatibility or relationship compatibility? Like, let's go backwards for a moment. Where do we, the average people, Joe Normal, Jane Normal, what do we get wrong, misunderstand about compatibility?
I would say the number one thing that people conflate compatibility with, which it's not, is personal preferences, right? That people often assume the compatible means it's something which is going to be immediately attracted to them on the surface. And I think that really the implicit to the kind of idea of compatibility matching or creating products that heighten compatibility is that those products are going to be solving on the issues that your personal attraction or your personal satisfaction in the short term doesn't optimize. That's the whole reason you can create a product which increases the compatibility of a pairing is because personal decision making, personal problem solving in these areas leave a lot of the important variants untouched. That if compatibility was just giving you what you like, well, you're pretty good at knowing what you like already. So, you know, that's not compatibility. That's collaborative filtering. That's predictive marketing, right? It's not what we mean when we say compatibility. When we talk about compatibility, we're talking about matching on things which are going to predict the long-term outcomes. And generally speaking, since to do that, you need to look at dyads, at pairings that were created by the existing process, you're not looking at the things that lead to that short-term satisfaction, right? Because those things are already homogenized on. So our compatibility modeling is very much about what is going to lead to long-term success, which you aren't already considering, right? We look at people that are already in the job to find out how they're doing. So they've all already been hired. They've all already gotten the job. So the compatibility piece isn't predicting, when we're talking about values, the culture compatibility here, that compatibility piece isn't predicting how likely you are to get the job. Because everyone that it's modeled on, everyone who was the source of data for creating that compatibility model already got the job.
Yeah.
So that's probably the biggest misunderstanding about compatibility. Now, to be fair, we found a long time ago in selling products that are based on compatibility that you also have to give people what they think they want. So there are satisfaction models which sit on top of compatibility models in our system. And those are based upon, you know, for eHarmony, how likely a dyad that's delivered as a match is to get into two-way communication. For the Elevated Careers product, we're using a model that predicts the probability of being hired based upon the contents of your resume and giving you that as a skill fit score and giving that to the hiring managers as well. And then ultimately, we will be training on who is getting communication and who is getting job offers through the product and creating more and more machine learned models to set on top of that to increase the degree to which the product can give people things that they also find immediately attractive. I just think that's an important difference between that and compatibility.
Steve, can I jump in for a second? Because you said something that I want to ping on, and I want to make sure I understand you. Did you say that people, what they think they need, like a satisfaction piece, what if what they think they need isn't actually what they need? You're assuming the self-awareness there that may or may not be present. So, I mean, how does that work?
Well, in terms of statistical modeling, you're talking about having some measure, having some indicator that people like what they're getting. So like in Google AdWords, where everything's based on click-through, you're using that click as your signal that they like what they see, and then you're optimizing on that. At eHarmony, where communication is the least the lowest common denominator for getting two people into a relationship, because they have to communicate with each other first, that's that indicator that they are satisfied with it. So that's what we're talking about with Elevated Careers, is modeling on those very, very short-term or near-term indicators that the job looked appropriate to the job seeker or the talent looked appropriate to the hiring company. I think what you're talking about when you say, yeah, but people don't know what's good for them, well, that goes back to compatibility, right? Someone will say, I really want a job, you know, working in ad sales or something, because they have some friends that work in ad sales and they think this is a good lifestyle and they want to have that lifestyle. So coming out of college, they look for a job in ad sales. It could very well be that what makes their friends a good fit for those companies where they're doing ad sales are not traits that they have in common with their friends, you know, that what they think they need or what they think they want is actually not a good fit for them at all. Our product will be solving for that. That's what the compatibility models will hopefully tell them, that you're not a good fit here. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Can compatibility, or does, after you've studied this for as long as you have, does compatibility change over time? I mean, like the climate here, and all of a sudden we fast forward over a period of time, does it change or does it remain constant?
Well, in regards to relationship compatibility for romantic relationships, I mean, we haven't seen a lot of time-based drift with the models, and we find that most of the traits that we're measuring in individuals are pretty stable over time, too. They're kind of like deep psychometric and values traits. When it comes to career and you know, company value or company culture with employee values matching, we have only been looking at this for 2 years, 2.5 years now. We, as we do ongoing research, we'll have to find out. You know, you definitely see companies where they're having problems with their culture as identified by, you know, a consulting firm or an IO consultant who comes in and they're facing a problem with attrition or churn and problems with their culture identified, and companies can take steps to address those problems. So I think you can definitely identify anecdotal examples of when companies take extraordinary steps to change their culture. And we will need to get in the loop with companies that are doing that if they want to have great success with our product. But in terms of companies on average, companies in general, the corporate culture kind of drift that happens organically over time, I doubt it's very large. But we will have to find, we'll have to learn that over time.
So what happens if there's multiple cultural realities within an organization? Because, I mean, that can happen, right, based off of team and off of location. How do you create some sort of employer culture identity that's homogenous enough to care for the entire organization and still be meaningful?
Yeah, well, there's two answers to that. I mean, one answer would be that there's a bit of academic research that's been done on companies that has shown that having a disparate company culture across different verticals of a company is actually not good. That's a kind of a definition of a weak company culture and a dysfunctional company culture, and that you are going to have higher performance in companies where all the different verticals within the company believe the company stands for the same things than companies where that's not true. I think, you know, a great example of that would be Enron, right, where you had an HR department who thought the company stood for one thing and a sales department and account management department who thought it stood for something very, very different, you know, and probably a board of directors who thought it stood for something else as well. So this is not a good thing for a company to have, at a certain level, to have different ideas about what that company stands for. Now, that being said, when you talk about different organizations or different sub-organizations within a company having different cultures, you may be talking about something that would be more molecular in regards to the values that are being rewarded within those verticals, and those might very well differ while the culture, the overarching culture of the company, is staying much the same. And I think the issue there would be that the factors that we are, the 16 factors that we're using to indicate company culture and which we have found are important in interaction with individuals, hopefully those are things which are more representative of the higher order company cultures, which are homogenous across the different verticals than they are highly disparate across verticals. And again, that's something we're going to have to learn with time. So we've been looking at entire organizations at a piece in building this. As we go forward and do more and more work with more and more companies, we are definitely going to be looking to find out, hey, are there important interactions across, you know, different broad divisions, such as technology versus finance versus marketing versus, you know, fabrication or manufacturing. Do we see that there are clear differences in the factors that we are using, and those need to be addressed by having different models or different profiles for the different parts of the company? We've created a product that will allow us to essentially plug in a functionally infinite number of cultural profiles and as many models as there are profiles, if that's necessary. So ultimately, while we are going live with a product that's using, some broad models that we feel generalize well, we do have the ability within this product without having to do any custom development. I mean, it's as simple as basically changing weight parameters in a lookup table that goes into the models when they compile at the beginning of each day. We can basically have a profile for every division of every company in the world if that's the data that turns out to be the most powerful and we have access to the data. And similarly, to have a bespoke model for every single culture that's represented. So we can play it both ways.
So that's pretty impressive. Also sounds fairly in-depth, but you said it's fairly easy to set up. What is involved with this? Because I would think there'd be a lot of pre-work before something like this became usable in any organization.
A lot of what work?
A lot of pre-work, a lot of setup stuff.
Pre-work. Yeah, we've been working hard. We are busy bees, man. Busy.
I'm sure you are. What about within an organization, though? So, if I'm at company X and we recognize that there is some sort of an issue, we do have high levels of attrition in different job families. Can we, do laser focus into specific job families and not involve the entire organization? Or does that shoot us in the foot?
Yeah, you can absolutely involve just the area that you feel is problematic. Assuming you have enough bodies in that area to have, to make it meaningful to talk. I mean, if you've got a 5-person team that's having a problem, you're not going to address that with a culture analysis of the team, right? So you have to talk about what scale you're at. But absolutely. You can engage with just the part of the company that you want to engage with. The pre-work, as you called it, that a company needs to engage in, the data collection instruments that we have, the data collection process we have, it's so easy. It's basically, a 5 to 10 minute survey that employees can take on their phone while they're waiting in line for lunch. It's not hard to get employees to answer the questions necessary to enable this tool to be leveraged at a very, very powerful way. It just takes a little bit of commitment, a little bit of communication, I think, to the employees about why you're doing it and what the benefits to everyone involved are going to be. People seem very, very willing to talk about what they think is important and even more willing to talk about what they think of the company they work at. So, generally speaking, when we get a company involved, getting 80-85% compliance from the employees is very easy.
I think too, Crystal, one of the points is that what we're not trying to do is say good or bad culture. What we're trying to do is build models that match you with a culture that fit you. So it's never going to be, the survey work and the work we do is never going to say, oh, you've got a bad culture and you need to work on this, or you've got a good culture. We can point out to the company things that they might want to communicate more about the benefits of their company, but it's really about matching people to a culture that they fit well, because everybody fits differently. So,
right.
Steve's point, it's not a lot of work.
Right. A question from the Twitter stream, actually, around the underpinnings of values and personality traits and compatibility. Are those things factored in? Are they baked in? Are they a part of the process? Or is it something else? I think people are curious what's under the engine. How do you do this? And without getting into proprietary, I think they're just kind of curious as to how it actually works.
So you're curious to know what the factors are that we're looking at?
Yeah, I think, if I could derive what the tweet was really about, is they're actually about the relationship between one's values and one's personality traits and compatibility.
Well, the way we've created our models, it should be noted that we started with a assessment, a review of all the research we could find and all the products we could find, every goofy little online blog talking about company culture that specified a rubric for looking at it. You know, we spent months compiling all those things and then creating an omnibus tool that we felt had questions to represent all the values that were described in those research papers and tools. You know, sometimes we actually were able to, you know, download instruments that were used by researchers or instruments that are used by competing firms and then just modify things a little bit in order not to be, you know, violating anyone's copyright. But we rolled all these things up to where we had several hundred questions, and then we administered those things in waves, broken into pieces, until we came up with a set of items that were both statistically reliable, meaning they seemed to have real variance across a number of items that would indicate that there's something fundamental being measured, which is different from the other things the other questions are measuring, and then had predictive validity in regards to when you looked at the scores that a job holder gave you about themselves and the scores they gave you to describe the company they were at, the interaction between those scores would predict how satisfied they were at in their place of work or how engaged they were. So our definition of a useful factor was that it both had these sufficient statistical properties of reliability, uniqueness, and predictive power when you looked at the interaction between the individual and the organization. Does that address the question?
I think more than anything, people are just curious as to kind of how you did it, and I think you did a great job of explaining it. Go to market. So now you're taking something, and then everyone knows eHarmony. I don't think you can find anybody in the United States that doesn't know eHarmony. You all have done a wonderful job branding yourselves. How do you carry something that's dating, you know, something that's kind of over here, and then carry that over into the business world? Like, if you can, give us what your approach to the enterprise is, and how have you had any challenges or any setbacks trying to bring the dating world over into the enterprise?
One way we do it is by working with brilliant people like Crystal Miller and Carrie Corbin to introduce us to the industry so people will actually maybe even listen to us. But as far as the advantage we have is, you know, although we're kind of treating this product as a startup, we do have the power of a big brand behind us, which really gives us a step up, you know, at least getting people to listen to us, and you know, we've got the expertise in matching that, you know, Steve has a long storied history with. I haven't felt, you know, in the conferences that we've gone to, in the companies we've talked to, I haven't felt much resistance as far as people listening to us and understanding kind of the move from the dating matching to company and employee matching. It's a total different type of matching set. You know, dating is matching dyads, and this is matching one to many in many cases. So there's a difference.
Oh, wait a second. Hold up. Got to stop you. So, I mean, yeah, sure. It's different maybe from a data perspective, but you got to know that for years recruiters have been saying, oh, you know, finding a job is like dating. The recruiting process is like dating, and every tech company known to man is trying to be the eHarmony of jobs, and y'all are eHarmony, so, I mean, that's going to squash that a little bit. So, I mean, really, is it that different when you think about it? You've got two parties that have to have mutual interest, that have to kind of go along the same path, that have to at some point pop the question and say yes. How different is it really?
Yeah, Kristen, that's true. And what I mean by the difference is the difference comes in how we create the tool. So, you know, the creating the matching between dyads is easy. Not easy. Sorry, Steve. It's very difficult and is very involved. But creating them...
Super valuable.
And super valuable. But creating that matching between, you know... It's fun. funny. One of the reasons that eHarmony wanted to do this is exactly because so many people were saying, hey, we're the eHarmony of jobs. And they felt like, well, if everybody's going to say that, we might as well do it because we are the eHarmony of jobs. But, Steve, do you want to talk a little bit about the kind of this, either the sameness or difference when you come to the dating and the employment matching?
Yeah, I mean, the big difference is it's much, much more complicated to create employment and you know, company to talent matching systems than it is to create a person-to-person matching system. At a research level, at a methodology level, it's only a little bit more complicated, right? I'm going to use aggregate descriptions of a company to represent the company and create a profile from everyone who I have that company in response to me. And then I'm going to interact each individual with that aggregate description to create my interaction, you know, features. And then I'm going to create my models to predict the engagement of the individuals based on those interactions. That's not hard math. But now you're talking about when you integrate that into a product, you've got to constantly be getting data from a bunch of people about each organization to create that map of the organization, and creating and keeping that in a place where you're updating it and you're normalizing it and you're matching it to third-party information, et cetera. And then when individuals come in, they are being interacted with that. That's fundamentally a lot more complicated than a dating site where every individual that comes in is that individual, and they're compared to other individuals that are in, and then those comparisons lead to either a good match or not, right? So it's ironic that the Elevated Careers product, well, I guess it's not ironic. If we had sat down in 1998 and said, well, what product would be harder to build, an online dating product or a career matching product, I think everyone would have said, oh, well, an online dating product would be much harder, you know, if you're going to try to have compatibility, because no one's ever done that. Whereas there's all these job boards out there, and there's all these people talking about how to test someone to best put them in a job, and there's all this, you know, all these IO psychologists selling tests and telling companies what to do. Surely that would be easier. And the reality is it's not. The reality is that almost everything we look at out there that's purporting to do this isn't really doing it. And to do it right and to do it the way, you know, we have done matchmaking for relationships is actually a lot harder. So that's one difference.
So that's fair. I'm gonna pivot on you just a little bit because we've got, about 12 minutes left in the show, and I do want to hit on some things about what should people look for to know whether or not this is something they need to do. I mean, because it's one thing to say everyone should do this on some level, sure, great. But how do you know if it's something that you need to invest in time or money this year or next year? Like, what are some signs that you should be looking for within your organization?
You need to hire people?
I think, you know, there's a lot of things. There's a lot of things, Crystal. I'll mention it to a few, and Steve, you can jump in. But, you know, there's the obvious things, of course. You know, there's the turnover and the time to hire and the cost associated with hire and all those things. And if they're going up and up and up, that's a sign. But I think it's really more kind of the intrinsic things. Are the hiring managers meeting, what are you really matching on? Are you really still just matching on skills? And is that enough? And I think what we're finding is it's not. You know, basically, if you've got people coming in, you're spending a lot of time and money training them, they stick around for a while until they find the next great thing and they get poached or, you know, somewhere else. These are the kind of things, you know, that we're discovering with this tool, with this survey. You know, it's interesting. We have done some tests with some companies, and we've been providing them with reports on the culture and what we're finding out. And what we're finding out is a lot of the things that companies feel that are the important things that they have to offer their candidates to, or their talent to stick around or to even come to the company are very different than what that talent really wants. And so if you know, you can kind of feel that disparity and see that. So, for instance, we had one company who, when we showed them that, what was it? They were ranking their employees were ranking the company very low in work-life balance, and the vice president of HR was very surprised by that, and she said, you know, I don't know what else we can do for work-life balance. Well, what we found out is that the dimension of compatibility that they were actually not reaching well with their talent was the communication part. You know, they had great work-life benefits, but they weren't communicating them well enough to their talent, and people are leaving. So there's a lot of signs of why this is so important to do, and to move this kind of culture matching way up in the hiring funnel, so that you can bring people in who are going to stick around, who the things that you're providing are valuable to them.
Question about feedback. This is William again. What role? Because we both y'all have done a wonderful job of saying, you know, we're just trying to get people to have a better match. At the end of the day, a better match. We're not going to get into the good and the bad, and we're not going to tell people and play the moral authority or any of that type of stuff. We're just trying to get people to a better match, which I think is both simple and complex simultaneously. So how do you? Is feedback important? So to the individual, to the company on the enterprise side of things, do you see it as a part of what you need to be doing or that you're going to do? And give people, it's not just match, but why, and give them feedback pointers, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of feedback that's delivered in the product about why someone is or is not a good fit. I think the key issue of wanting or getting a profile of a company and having the product be involved in providing either job seekers or just, you know, curious passersby what the overall cultural profile of the company is, that's not something that we want to get involved in. For a variety of reasons, you know, one, you've got potential misuse of that. I mean, you've had a lot of a press around Glassdoor, Glassdoors? That's not right.
Glassdoor.
glass ladders, ladder doors, whatever it's called. You've got a lot of potential, you know, and this has happened with Yelp too. You get a lot of potential misuse and bad behavior around the incoming data when you do that. So the easiest way of making sure that the data we're getting is unbiased by any of those kind of tangential desires by a company to show that they're awesome or by a disgruntled ex-employee to show that they suck, we've just removed those from the table because no one gets to see that, right? All you get to see is how well does this company fit you and why, and or from a company standpoint, how well does this employee or potential employee fit you and why? So it's a very utilitarian, very focused presentation of this information that hopefully removes any avenue for misuse. Now, if a company wants to know what their cultural profile is because they feel they've got a larger problem, I absolutely support that, and we can support that as well. That's not part of this product. That's like a different level of professional service that we'll have to address as we go forward.
All right. I just love this conversation. I'm so glad that we moved the show from 30 to 45 minutes. The concept of kind of an idealized you know how everyone kind of has a version of themselves in their head that's not quite the truth. It's their truth, but not quite the truth. I think companies have that as well. They have an idealized version of themselves and individuals. How do you, first of all, is that true? A. B, how do you kind of get past the point of the idealized version of yourself is not really kind of the truth?
Well, so at the simplest level, everyone has an idealized version of themselves. And everyone, when they answer a questionnaire about themselves is filtering the truth through that idealized version of themselves. And therefore, whatever variance you find from those questions that you've asked large groups of people predicts other outcomes for those people, will continue to do so when you ask those people in the future or when you ask a separate group of people. As long as you don't have a situation where whatever bias is created by the fact that people are answering your questions through a filter of how they want to be perceived, as long as you don't somehow change that bias horribly between your research data collection and your application of the models from your research, then you're okay. So the question really becomes, do people answer questions when they're going somewhere to get a job in the same way that they answer questions when you do research on people who have jobs? And I think that's a very relevant question. And again, the way we built this product, we're trying to get people involved in it who aren't necessarily looking for jobs, right? We're trying to get people involved in this product at the level of how compatible are you with where you work now, so that we are offering them feedback and insight into how well they fit their current job. We've got an infographic that they can get, and we're going to be recruiting people from eHarmony who aren't necessarily looking or even unhappy with the jobs they're at, to try to get them involved in this process of learning about how well their job fits them and who they are when it comes to their values, so that they will not have a different bias than the people who we did research on had, right?
Okay, that's fair. I'm gonna hop in here for a second, Steve, and you can continue down this road, but we've got about 3 minutes left, and I'm gonna guess, given that you guys have a more in-depth foundation program or research program that you're wanting to do as this program begins to launch, you're going to want people to know where to find you. So would you like to share where people can find you if they want to get more information or if they want to join this foundational beta group?
We are always happy to talk to you. We've got a data collection page online at www.elevatedcareers.com if people feel like filling out a web form. Otherwise, I would say the best thing to do is just to send an email to either Dan or myself. Our emails are super simple. Dan Erickson, Eddie Harmony.
It's even easier. D Erickson, DERICKSON, at eHarmony.com. They can email me. They could go to that web form, but if someone wants to email me and talk about this and help us with the data collection, we do have some I think some really good valuable feedback that we can provide them. And Steve, talk about a couple of the engagement report and the kind of tailored bespoke.
Yeah, well, I mean, it kind of comes down to you were talking about getting a profile of your company's culture and finding out what the important factors are in regards to your organization. So for beta companies, we are doing that. We are essentially doing a full report which tells them everything that a snapshot of their company indicates about their current company culture on the 16 factors that we are using. And can we send them that PDF of the 16 factors in case they want to post it on their website?
Sure.
Do they have that?
Yep, we will.
And then giving them a bespoke model for how the interactions between their employees and those factors are leading to, you know, higher or low engagement in their current workforce, and then what a profile of an incoming employee that would guarantee or predict the highest level of engagement would be, and then we can even give them access to a quick, you know, 50 question questionnaire that they can integrate into their current ATS, or which we can host for them to make part of their inbound funnel for applicants. So these are all, you know, there's a whole kind of package of higher or deeper insights that we give companies that get involved at a beta test level right now.
That's awesome. Well, I appreciate you guys joining us today. I think we're just about out of time. But for everyone, if you want more information, we will make sure that we get that information tweeted out. Thank you so much for joining us. Tomorrow we have John DePoison. Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
Thank you all.
Thanks for the
wonderful show.
Thank you,
Thanks, everyone.
Okay. Bye-bye.